Welcome to Inspiring People and Places, where we interview national leaders in the architectural, engineering, construction, and development industry in an effort to educate, innovate, and inspire industry professionals to disrupt the status quo, improve their project teams, and steward public and private investments more effectively. I'm your host, BJ Kramer, President and CEO of MCFA. Allow me to introduce today's guest. All right, Inspiring People and Places, we've got a treat today. We have talked in the past of a sad topic, the suicide epidemic inside of both the construction industry and the veteran population, which are both near and dear to my heart. Today, we're going to, I think, flip the script and pull some threads in a direction similar, but I think a positive spin. I have Jody Wellman joining us, who is my first TED Talk guest. So I'm excited about that. Jody, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me here. I'm very excited to, like you said, flip the script. We will not be having an overly morbid conversation, I don't think.
No, it starts with a morbid question or a morbid topic. So tell everybody your story.
So yes, as promised, we're not going to go too morbid, but there will be. In maybe some reverse order, you know, I started 4,000 Mondays. My current company.
Yep.
As a reflex to say, oh my goodness, we only get 4,000 Mondays. Because I woke up to this idea of time being scarce. Let's get on with the business of living. After my mom died in her late 50s, which is, you know, super early. But
totally.
I was going to say funnily enough, and maybe it's not funny, but after time, a lot of things become funny. When she died, it wasn't so much that I was sad to have lost her. That was true too. But it was more this even sort of more sad thing, which was that I believe she died with a ton of regrets. So cleaning up her place, she wrote all these manuscripts and she did these art projects and she had these business ideas. She's this really creative soul, but she didn't execute on any of them. Well, she did try and send out one of her books to a few publishers. She got rejected, as is, you know, kind of par for the course. And then she just quit it. She didn't have the confidence. And so when I was cleaning up all this stuff, it was like this land of like dormant intentions, you know, land of lost dreams of, it woke me up because I realized, quite to be super honest, oh, this might be me. You know, I have dreams and goals that maybe I'm not taking action on. Mm-hmm. And then studying it at the University of Pennsylvania in the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology program, it gave me, oh, what I thought was like this firepower about, oh, this is legit. Like there's actually science behind this idea that we can use mortality to motivate us to live. And that's why I changed kind of my life. So I worked corporately for 17 years in leadership. And then I was executive coach and working with teams and leadership for 10. And then now it's moved really fully into 4,000 Mondays, which is getting up and out and talking and writing and getting people to hopefully feel inspired by the idea that their life is a countdown timer and how to use that to their best advantage.
Yeah. So I'm going to go, I don't know, in a direction. We're going to meander here a little bit. I haven't met anybody that's gone through PEN or a positive psychology program that I don't enjoy being around.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, I guess it's people that are attracted to that want the world to be a happier, better place. Talk to us about that program, because Adam Grant is obviously very well known and maybe you interacted with him there.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of goodness going on at Penn and the positive psychology. So talk to us about that program.
Oh, all too happy to. And it's even by way of definition, because I just assume sometimes that people know what it is, but most don't. And so it's defined as the science of what makes life worth living. Okay, so said more scientifically, it is the science and study of well-being, of what it takes for individuals and teams and groups and communities to thrive. So most psychology is abnormal. It's studying all the diseases and problems that why we are all so tormented. And whereas positive psychology is, wait a minute, what if we studied what's going on when things are going right, like our strengths, the attributes of the good life? So I do agree that there's probably a disposition about people who are interested in well-being that may skew, doesn't even necessarily mean that we skew more towards optimism, because there are a lot of pessimists in the positive psychology world. But I do think that there is probably a characteristic about a desire for thriving that just can't come out of our pores. So I do think that it is. And Adam Grant, by the way, was not in the positive psychology directly. He was at Wharton. So we were in the Wharton building, but never, our paths didn't cross academically.
Maybe I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I just had another buddy on, Mike Irwin, who went through the positive psychology program at Michigan with Chris Peterson.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He was one of the early creators now, since passed away. But there's a line that Chris Peterson used that I've just somehow kind of glommed onto, but it's that his point is positive psychology is the study of what we're doing when we're not frittering life away. Mm-hmm. And that grabbed me because so much of what I talk about is this desire to live a squander-free life.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but I can get very good at squandering my time.
I think there's actually an entire industry on social media trying to make money off of us doing that. Maybe Netflix also.
I've partaken in both. And the idea, of course, we need a little bit of squander.
That bastard who created the infinite scroll on Instagram.
That guy is licking his lips. He's not squandering. So yeah, the idea like squandering our lives or frittering our lives away. I'm not here to judge. Trust me. Like I have a well-worn dent in my couch because I love Netflix. But it's that and recognizing that, wait a minute, back to the idea of it's not enough to just say, I love the idea about accomplishing these goals, or the bucket list is super popular, right? Oh, these are all the things I'm going to do before I die. I am very suspicious about the bucket list because I think it's just a fabulous repository for dreams we're just going to put the lid on and put aside and say, this is for later, code for retirement, which we should all be like, what? Because that means it gives us a little bit of permission to squander now, to fritter away now.
Kick it down the road, yeah.
Right, for lots of reasons, yeah.
I mean, everything you're saying speaks to my DNA. I'm a take action guy. I think there's too many people that let good ideas die on bar napkins, never take action, never turn a business plan into at least a side hustle or try it out or just get started. Maybe there's even people listening that thought about starting a podcast and haven't done it yet. All of that stuff is what we're about. The idea of 4,000 Mondays is that there's a lot of people that get the Sunday scary. I'm assuming I'm reading into this. Sure. Sunday scaries come and like Monday's here and here we go again, another week to make the donuts. Is that why you went to 4,000 Mondays?
Yeah. Well, 4,000 was the math. So there was really no debating. Right. That average is like 80 years, but then you're right. Mondays, there was a choice point and it was like 4,000 Saturdays. Well, that's fun, but there's no edge to it because like we all kind of like our lives on Saturday or at the very least Friday night. So Mondays is like, that's where I want to rankle. I want like just in the same way that I joke about being like the Grim Reaper's cheerleader, but very cheerfully. So it's like, I want to push us and nudge us. And I do think that like Monday has feelings. And so it's an indication when we are like either Sunday night or Monday when we don't need to be raring to go every Monday, but I do think it's a way to look at our lives and say, am I savoring it? Am I squandering it? Am I tolerating? And a lot of us with our careers, we settle and tolerate. And that is such a gut-wrenching, saddening existence. I've lived it, so I know full well personally that idea about outstaying a welcome. And I don't mean a welcome. It's the internal feeling of I'm done with this job or this stage of my life and I want to move on, but I'm just too scared and don't know how. So Monday is usually a bit more visceral than it is on a...
I go with you and I'm philosophically completely aligned. And I love kind of the acuteness of the 4,000 Mondays and reminding people like, wake up, don't waste it. But I have kind of two challenges to that. One is... I was literally just, I talk about do hard things. I don't know if you've read that book. And like, sometimes we have to go endure and do hard things to get through it and persevere and get better. So I want to challenge us on that. And there's also, well, let's go there first. Mm-hmm. So not everything is rainbows and cupcakes and, oh, I'm just excited to get to work on Monday. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, what I'm doing right now is hard and I've got a challenging job or a challenging client or a challenging boss. Mm-hmm. And I don't think your message is walk away from hard things.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for catching that. So you're queuing up this idea I like to look at life as a framework of course, not just living longer. And I know, you know, mm-hmm. you want to live until you're 107 and beyond, and that's lovely. And you also want to live, you want quality of life. So you want to live, what I look at it as, wider and deeper. So wider is the vitality, and that's kind of what we've been hinting at so far. It is the cupcakes, and I'll throw in the cocktails and all the fun things, right? Like it's enjoying life. It's getting out there, getting off the couch, et cetera, participating. And that's important. So it's an important domain of well-being. And then there is another whole domain, which is what I call living deeper, and that's with meaning. And that's with having that sense of purpose. And in this spectrum, this is where there's going to be a lot of, let's just say, rich nuance. And many of us know that, you know, meaning is often forged through fire, and it is through struggle, suffering, loss, grief, tears, sometimes blood and sweat, all the things that make like life real and hard. That is often where meaning ends up being extracted. And this is not a very convenient way for me to put a bow on crap times in a toxic positivity way. But the truth is there. It's that sometimes a meaningful life is one where it is that, oh, like we had to navigate the loss of a loved one, or we had to navigate a bankruptcy, or the demise of a marriage, or, you know, fill in the blanks, there's no shortage. And so that is where, admittedly, that depth of life can sometimes come in, like, I don't know, like that umami flavoring of life, where it's like a little bit more nuanced than it is just that, the simplistic stuff. So I think that it's built in to the good life. You know, challenge is built into the good life. And many people, some of us are wired to go for challenge, but many people would sort of, given a multiple choice, be like, okay, easy sounds easy. I think I'd like that. But most of us are actually wired to want a sense of achievement that really only comes from overcoming either adversity or figuring out a really hard problem, you know, or like learning the really hard language or navigating through a really tough business time at business when you were on the brink, you know? So the good life does not exist in my mind without having the problems and foibles that life gives us. It's like the salt that has to be there with the sweet.
The good life is not the easy life. Mm-hmm. Is probably how I'll summarize that.
Yeah, let's pretend I said that.
What you're saying about deeper and meaning and purpose, back to Chris Peterson and Mike Irwin, they have the Positivity Project, which was inspired by Chris Peterson's passing, and they have hashtag Other People Matter, because service to others is where a lot of meaning is created. So whether you're a parent and you're raising kids, and as a parent, raising three kids is not always cupcakes and cocktails, although the cocktails help. It's hard.
Yeah. The trade-off that exists. So I like how sometimes we have to be cognizant, like the version of not squandering life and living a good life while I've got my 1,841 Mondays left, because that's my countdown. We have to be conscious sometimes and say, if I'm going to be entering this phase of life, and it could be parenting, or it could be starting a new business or launching a new program or whatever it is, it sometimes means that traveling the road that leads you to meaning, that leads you to accomplishment, that leads you to, sometimes it's even connection with others. That's like, again, back to that meaning spectrum of living deeper. We will often need to compromise on some of the width and the vitality of life, right? Because it'll mean, I'm thinking right now, a workshop I just did for a group where they're embarking on, like, they're starting a whole new division. And they're all sitting there going, we are rolling up our sleeves, and we know that we're going to need to like burn the midnight oil. I mean, maybe literally, in order to get this thing off the ground. And that's going to mean that life is going to look different. Not as much, you know, typical fun and back to the cupcakes and cocktails. And yet it's in pursuit of something that matters to them. So I think that understanding that there's a give and take, ebb and flow over time, where you're going to have sometimes more meaning at the expense of vitality, and sometimes more vitality will take over. And that's fun too.
I love it. So then the other question I have is, let's make it practical. I love the paradigm shift. Hey, it's mm-hmm. Sunday. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, tomorrow's Monday, but you only got 2,000 left or 1,000 left or maybe 50 left.
Yeah.
So that's a good paradigm shift, and kind of like, hey, maybe it's the first step of pumping yourself up to like, hey, go attack life on Monday, not dread it.
Yeah.
What's some practical action steps that you recommend? And mm-hmm. and I don't know if they're more strategic action steps or tactical action steps, but
yeah,
what are your thoughts there? Like somebody's listening and it's like, yeah. all right, I got it. But I really don't love my job, but my job mm-hmm. provides for my family and it works. And mm-hmm.
yep.
Where
yep.
are we at?
What are we really doing with this? Yeah. I would be remiss if I didn't still just say number one step always, always, always is to counter Mondays. And I know it sounds, I just have to go back to the, breaking it down to the ridiculous is the thing that sometimes we need to wake up. So there's a calculator on my website if math is not your thing and we don't want to waste precious time in life doing math, but it's on the resource page. Figure it out. Like, how much do you have left? That might be the very animating thing for you to go, whoa. Now that I see that I have, and like to your example, you know, I worked with a guy in the last 6 months who was like, I see now that in my career, like he buys and sells companies. He's like, if I only do one every, you know, a quarter, like my time is ticking. And that helped him to realize what he needed to change in his business. So number one, get granular, do the math, use that to your advantage to get moving. Number two is many of us are actually not even in touch with what we would prefer, what we would like to be having happen, right? We walk around with this idea of like, we're kind of aware when we're miffed or when we're unhappy, but we actually can't define what would be cool if, you know? And so I do think that there's sometimes merit, and I'm always a fan of like, go off and have your Starbucks coffee or go sit by the lake or go have your martini, do what you want to do, whatever you do. Be like, if I knew my time was limited, wink, wink, like how would I want it to be? Imagine that you didn't have any of the things that are the stories that are in your life right now that you might feel encumbered by, the mortgage, the notion of responsibility is that I can't leave my job. I can't go back to school. I can't move to a cool country that I thought would be neat. Like, first of all, those are all stories that we have, you know, baked into ourselves that we can change, but to fathom something, like get in touch with what you actually think would be a great way to live before you freaking die.
Inspiring People and Places is brought to you by MCFA. MCFA is a CVE verified, service disabled, veteran owned small business. At MCFA, our why is to inspire people and places through project leadership. We provide planning, strategy, program management, and construction management support services to a wide variety of public and private sector clients.
That's a wake up sometimes too, is that I do want to move to Oregon, you know, or I've always wanted to go back to school and study coding, or I do really
talk
want
about doing
to...
hard things. Well, I can't imagine studying coding right now.
I know some people's tortures, other people's life. Yeah, you know. So I think,
I love that.
And, yes. And
if I can comment on it, because I just had a guest recently, Larry Yatch. He was the first person to define success in this way. And it wasn't about not attaining things, because attaining things and accomplishing goals is important. And sometimes they're what mm-hmm. fund the other things. But I actually have it written on my board. Success mm-hmm. equals an optimized daily experience sustained over time. Mm-hmm. Meaning, I love the vacation week when I get to go to the beach and sip cocktails at the ocean and stare off and do nothing. I do love that, but mm-hmm. it's not optimized because it's not sustainable daily experience over time. So I love thinking about it, you know, like you said, granularly, that this isn't how do I save up for the one-time vacation, although right. those one-time vacations are great, but it's like, how do I do simple things that make my yeah. day and my week feel more
yes.
great.
Oh, and I would love to expand on simple. You just made me think, because back to this idea of like, what makes this applicable? Mm-hmm. We have to comment on, I'd be naive if it was just, hey, imagine and go and jot down some notes at the beach about the life you'd love to live. Yeah, I mean, that's a great start for many of us, because we actually are often living in the dark with not being aware of it. But most of us are not motivated alone by that. It's like that funny notion in psychology that we're more motivated to avoid pain than seek pleasure. So, okay, let's dose the pain, boys and girls. Let's do the deathbed regrets, because we got to flip this on its head and say, if tonight was the night, you're on your back and good news, there's lots of morphine and you're feeling good, but it's like, sorry, but your time's up. What would you regret not doing? So sometimes it's that, the feeling of, oh, geez, I would feel like I always wanted to learn Italian, or I always wanted to take my whole family on that stupid cruise, or I always wanted to dye my hair that color, or I always wanted to go back to school. Like whatever that list would be sometimes is more salient than just sitting and dreaming. So whatever floats your boat. But all I want to do is like get to the thing about if you knew your time was limited. And then here's where I find the secrets of people who've had some experience where they've had like a near-death experience, or maybe they had a brush with death. Mm-hmm. I'm so freaking envious of them. And this is all the work I do. It's like ultimately what I really want us to have. I want all of us to be walking around as though we peered over the edge and saw what was there, didn't die. And then we come back and we catch our breath and go, whoa, I want to live the way that they have clarity, because they have so much more intention. They abandon the stupid stuff that the rest of us are still worried about, which is like, oh, I didn't respond to that email yet today, you know, or like, oh, what do the Joneses think? Or like the stuff that's like, they recalibrate their priorities. They're more in tune with, I don't care about the rules. I'm gonna go do the thing. And it doesn't mean, by the way, I'm not an advocate here about blowing up your life. Like I'm a pretty darn reserved kind of scaredy cat in life, but I make conscious choices that are in tune with, I would hate to get to the end and know I didn't do that thing that I've been saying I want to do. And I don't want to be the kind of person that lives, talked about it, but never did it kind of life. And so sometimes that can be the motivator too, is like thinking, imagine if I did almost die, or imagine if I was on my deathbed, what would be the stuff that I would love to be able to say I did, or at least feel like not an idiot because I didn't do it.
Hmm. You bringing that up, like the near-death experience, I did not have a near-death experience, but I think any military member that has deployed has to some degree had to either come to grips with the possibility of death or had somebody close to them killed over. And in my case, one of my best friends was killed. And I think that it results in I'm putting you on the spot, so I apologize, but I mentioned suicide at the beginning of the show. I think it turns into two things. One is you come back and you value life that much more. My line is, let us live our lives worthy of their sacrifice. The flip side of that is some people end up getting so consumed by that, or so consumed by what they saw, or so consumed by, they may have had the deepest meaning that they will ever have in service to their country. And when they take the uniform off, they no longer have identity or meaning.
A
simple, hey, paradigm shift may not be enough. What are your thoughts on those situations?
Such an important conversation. You know, you're highlighting, I think, whether it's through finishing a task, like a very important, you're through the military and then you're done, and then, and or let's substitute that for someone who is retiring, right? I was a doctor all my life and now I retired. And now who am I? What am I? Or you're done a really big project at work, or your kids are out of the house, right? The empty nest thing. We could substitute examples in life when we do have an identity change. And in psychology, they call it boundary situations. And these are often moments that do cause us to become sort of existentially aware in a way of like, whoa, I am temporary. And for many people, it's also like a big birthday, like turning 50 or 60 or some big event. Yeah. And it makes us do this thing where we're looking at our lives and there is often a problem of meaninglessness. Back to meaning again, right? So there's this thing called an existential vacuum, you know, where many of us will have that feeling of, oh, like what's it all for? Like, am I doing this life right? That's like the underbelly, the dark underbelly of a lot of what I'm talking about here, which is this idea of when you know 1,839 or 212, all the Monday, however many Mondays left, that can sometimes, it's the wake-up call, it can be the thing that presses on a bruise, you know, of I don't think I am doing this life justice, not just justice for those who've served, but even for the dreams I have. And now I look at this and I get encouraged, actually, because all the things I talked about, if you're doing the deathbed regret thing,
right,
or if you're fathoming the life you want, the good news is, for most of us, we're not on our death. Like, we could still do it. And they call them pregrets. These are regrets in the making that we could still take action on.
Right.
And so when you come back from the military or you're retiring or whatever, it's like this, sometimes it's the vastness, because freedom is one of our existential woes.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest things that causes us anxiety. It's like the burden of choice. And yet, this is back to something you said earlier, BJ, which I think is really crucial. It's like, sometimes it's the simple stuff. we have this pressure. I have to define the most amazing retirement, or I have to have this best career, or I have to have, who am I after I'm now no longer in the Army? And it's like, yes, and what if you just did one small thing at a time and said, what could I do to make my life feel a little bit wider today or this week? And, or what could I do to make my life feel a little bit deeper this week? And again, sometimes we just haven't done the diligence to sit and do the list, and we feel like we should know it, but we're busy, we're distracted, or we're just not self-aware, and that's okay. Have a list. I've got a list. I do this stuff for a living, and I've got to have a list of stuff I might like to do. If I've got 20 minutes between a meeting, what might I like to do? So I don't squander it. But it's often we underestimate the small little things that might bring us joy or give us a bit of meaning. And so back to your example of coming back from overseas and you're no longer in the uniform and you're like, wow, like my life, I may never have that big purpose again. You might not. And you might not, like if you're retiring from whatever right. job you did, but what could be something that makes me feel, what gives me that good feeling? You know what? I'd like to write a gratitude letter to that teacher I had in college who was just really supported me, even though I was a complete jerk. Or I would love to, I want to do one of those gratitude journal things, even though I hate the word journal? Or do I want to stop and plan a really amazing trip where I go and reunite with my, you know, long lost cousin that'll make me feel connected, but also it'll be great and we'll be in the mountains because I feel that sense of awe and wonder when I'm in, like,
there's no lack of
all these options at our disposal.
You made me think of, there was somebody, I can't even remember who it was. They were retired and I'm like, how's retirement treating you? And they said almost the most basic, but like amazing thing. They go to a children's hospital feeding clinic and they feed babies for like 4 hours a week because the hospital needs volunteers to do that. And it's like the most gratifying thing that you can help somebody do something that they can't do. And like,
yes,
it's a win-win. And it's like really rewarding for this lady in retirement that she, I have not thought of that moment until just now. But I thought it was really cool that she was so crystal clear. My week is great because I get to do this one thing and then I get to do all the other things I wanted to do in retirement. But like that was the highlight of
the
retirement years.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about, these are things that we don't necessarily think we have time for even before retirement, but I will challenge us because, you know, we sleep a third of our life. We work at least a third, but that leaves some hours. You know, like last time I did math, I was like, if you're sleeping 8 hours or you're whatever, and you're working, like we have discretionary time. And I think that we need to interrogate our reality and stop and think, if you have that yearning, like it might be kind of cool to live wider and do something that's more fun. And, or it might be cool to do something like one of my neighbors just started volunteering at the cat shelter. And like, that is just jazzing up his life. That's actually a combo of both being fun for him, vitality, and also meaningful
and
because these kittens now are living because of him, et cetera. Cuddling can keep you alive, right? That's like a very noble mission. We need to be aware, like there's nothing stopping us from sprinkling stuff in now. And it doesn't need to be big. I love the research studies even too about like altruism, like doing good things for people. We often think we've got to sign up for like the Thursday night soup kitchen shift. And I don't have time for that because life's crazy. And like, yeah, I would not like, that's, oof. But even the small good deeds we do, or even signing up and doing that on Thanksgiving morning, that carries through and permeates. And so don't underestimate the impact of even small or interspersed things. Just don't be afraid to do it. I think it's fear in some ways that makes us feel like we need to be encouraged to live, even though I know we want to.
Or we get overwhelmed by like, it feels hard and it's just easier to sit in the couch and because Netflix is right here or the Infinity Scroll is right here. David Allen and Getting Things Done, he would say like, what's the next physical action you can take? Like, all right, you got the list. Now what's the next physical action you can take?
To
do one of those things.
I love that. You know, I'm a fan of actually asking out loud. It needs to be out loud. There's, you know, neuroscience behind it. But this idea about, and I do this for productivity. And then there's two versions. One is, what's the most important thing I should be doing right now? And there's like, wait a minute. Like, this is like a secret test, but like the most important thing I should be doing. A lot of the times it's organizing all my to-dos that are usually around being productive. And like, I have like a real crush on productivity. I've always wanted to do that. And that's always going to be my default. And though it could be, what is the most important thing I should be doing right now to feel like I'm alive? Like what would make me feel alive now? And they're not always compatible. They don't always jive, right? So sometimes it's, I need to get working on this PowerPoint deck to get the thing done. But other times it's, I need to just go sit outside for a hot sec, sit back, look at the birds, maybe listen to a podcast like yours, and then come back. And that'll make me feel like, you know what? That was a better choice for 30 minutes than had I just answered 12 emails. And so those are just little tiny choice points. Like our and so I do believe asking it out loud can be crucial. I don't even care if you don't do it out loud. Just do it. Check in once a day or so. This is your life. What do I want to be doing now? Like, what would make me feel at this quick lunch break I'm taking, what would make me feel alive? Or I love the couch. I'm going to be on the couch most nights of the week, but what would be one thing next week that would make me not be on the couch or infinitely scrolling? Like, what would be something that could be cool to do? Huh, that. And no one ever regrets going and doing the thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Agree. All right. I got a couple of fast questions for you.
Ready.
Before I go to what's your most gifted book, I know that you're getting ready to release one. What is your book?
Oh, thanks for asking, because that will become my most gifted book. It is You Only Die Once, How to Make It to the End with No Regrets.
All right. And it's releasing when?
May 7th.
All right. Ooh. It's probably going to be pretty close to in line with this podcast. All right. What's your most gifted book or your favorite book in your library?
Oh, it is not academic at all. I say that because maybe because I guess I'm defensive. It's a silly book. It's 14,000 Things to Be Happy About. And it's a super simple, gifty, cutesy little thing. You might think it's for children, but we're all just big children. And it's a silly, long 14,000 list of things that I think help us to realize, oh man, like life isn't about one cruise to beach to tasting menu. Like those are the big things. What about the daily little tiny little things like, I don't know, a biscuit with warm butter? Like, wouldn't that make you happy right now?
Yeah, it would because I'm hungry.
It would. A little bit of jam.
Favorite quote?
Oh, Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, I don't know who that is. So this is a quote I've never heard before.
Okay. This one, oh my gosh. I think I know it by heart, but I'm going to give a backup just in case. Okay. So life should not be a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside in a cloud of smoke, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming, wow, what a ride.
I like it.
Right?
It's a good one. If you could have dinner with three people, who would they be? Dead or alive?
Yeah. I would totally pick Oprah because Oprah, wisdom, etc. I would totally pick my mom, rest in peace. And I would totally pick my dear husband.
I don't know that I'd make my wife's list.
she won't know. It's okay.
How do you want to be remembered? What do you want on your tombstone? You only have 17 some hundred Mondays left. What do you want on your tombstone? How do you want to be remembered?
It's my mission in life. I guess I'll try and find a way to word this for the tombstone to chisel it in. But my mission is for us to wake the F up to life. It's very eloquent. And so I want to be remembered as the one who
helped people wake the F up.
Wake the F up to life. Because man, it's ticking.
It is. Awesome. All right. The floor is yours. Close us out, Jody. Any closing inspiration or challenge or next actions that you want to remind the audience as the takeaway?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd say befriend the Grim Reaper. Do not shy away. That guy is a sneaky bugger, but he's got so much motivation up his sleeve to help us live with urgency and intention and priority and meaning and the cocktails, all of it.
Awesome. Jody, thank you so much for your work, and we look forward to the release of your book. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. This is time well spent.
Hey, everybody. If you're enjoying this show, do us a favor and subscribe to Inspiring People and Places on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast hosting platform. We'd also greatly appreciate if you left us a review and shared this with other entrepreneurial public servants and all your friends and family in the AEC space. Be sure to visit our website, www.mcfaglobal.com. Sign up for our newsletter to stay in touch with us and learn about all of the projects and clients we're helping. Last but not least, we are hiring. We are always hiring. Do us a favor. Take a look at what jobs we have open. Contact us through our website or connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, have a great rest of your week and a great weekend.